Sisterhood Stories is a collection of real, raw, and authentic conversations with inspiring women changemakers. We explore what it's like to be a woman in our world today. There are so many unique challenges that women face that are often not talked about, stigmatized, and kept under wraps. So this is a time for you to hear the stories of others, gather inspiration, and know that you are not alone in your journey. I am Jackie Love, the founder of Secret Sisterhood, a women's empowerment movement that empowers, uplifts, and inspires women around the world. So welcome to our tribe. Sisters, I'm here today with the amazing Dr. Samantha Graham, and you are in for a treat today. We're doing something a little bit different than our usual style, but I'm really excited because I think it's just going to be super eye-opening and insightful, so I'm really excited to get started. Dr. Samantha Graham has a PhD in education design and has her master's in human ecology that she got at Edinburgh University. She's the founder and CEO of State of Mind. She has been designing and facilitating group learning process for about 25 years, and she's created many programs for leading organizations, including working with the Rabbitohs Rugby League team, which she gave a great insight into all male cultures. Sam has long been interested in gender and the effects created by the lack of women in senior roles in all spheres of Australian society. So welcome, Sam.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm so excited for you to be here. So I heard you talk about, I think it was about a month ago now, was that?
Yeah.
And so I went to New Kind Conference in Tasmania, and Sam was there, and she presented this most amazing, insightful workshop. So I thought, okay, let's track her down because she's so great, and let's do like a mini workshop for all of our sisters just to hear what you kind of said during that session, because it was very eye-opening. And I am very much in the gender equality space, but there were so many facts and things came out that I just found so insightful. But your workshop was called The Prison of Patriarchy, Contours of a Destructive World. So just to give us a little bit of background, can you just describe what that means?
Yeah, so we're born into societal systems and structures that are invisible to us. We're not even aware that they're there. And this patriarchal worldview puts women in a certain place and men in a certain place, neither of which are helpful. They don't let us express the fullness of our being. And we're starting to see this even more and more with the ecological crisis. So what we're doing really is unpacking some of the assumptions that we're born into, whether it's linguistic, cultural, structural, or even in the built environment. We can see these patterns playing out. And it's like a headwind for women. We're constantly walking into this headwind.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's crazy. And kind of, I was saying to you before, working with Secret Sisterhood, I'm in the gender equality space and I meet so many women who are pioneering this movement and understand that we do still have a long way to go. And that's really amazing. But then I meet other people and they are very confused when I say that I'm advocating for gender equality in Australia. They often think I'm thinking of somewhere far away, but there's so many huge issues that are actually happening in Australia. But not even that, there's just these little things that are happening in our society that we are often unaware of, and it's often happening in a subconscious way, and I think we're all guilty of it. So that's why I'm really excited to sit down with you and just hear some of those things, because as I said before, I actually wasn't aware of a lot of them, and I think the more we can become aware of it, then we can hopefully begin to change those behaviours.
Yeah, well said. It's like shining a light on some very dark places in our own subconscious minds, let alone in the structures of society that keep us in this sort of second-class situation, really.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So within your workshop, you kind of broke it down and you looked at structural, cultural, linguistic, and the built environment, and you kind of broke them down and found sort of examples that are happening in each of those areas. So should we unpack some facts in each of them?
Yeah,
let's see how we go.
In the workshop, it was sort of an interactive, experiential way of coming to this.
And we actually, I think we got quite, not distracted, but there were so many people putting up their hands with all these things that they found and they saw in their own lives. So that's what actually for our listeners as well, when you hear these things, think, is this happening in your own life? Can you think of any other examples where this is happening as well?
Exactly, beautiful.
Yeah.
And they should all start popping to mind.
Yeah.
So we could start with structures.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So in terms of the bureaucratic structures that we are faced with, a great example is simply tax structures. Mm. So a classic one is tampons. which we have been paying GST on for the longest time, and it only recently changed. So that would suggest that tampons are not a necessity. Well, sorry, gentlemen, they are, actually.
Exactly. Oh, my God, I saw an article the other day, actually, and I don't know, some silly guy came out in the US or even in, I know maybe it was in Australia, and he said, oh, are these women going to start hoarding tampons now because they don't have to pay tax for them, they don't have to pay the GST. What are you talking about? Yeah. Crazy. And as you said, how is that not a necessity?
Totally. And there are countless examples. The other one is just that we're simply getting paid less.
Yeah.
And I never really understood that until the sentence was completed for me for doing the same work. Yeah. I thought when people said we're getting paid less, it meant, oh, well, you're in nursing, you're not the doctor, we can look at all of that, or you're in childcare and not a banker.
Yeah.
And all of that
means you're a mum and you're staying at home or you're working part-time, therefore you're going to be, getting paid less. But it's not even about that.
No, for doing the same work, we are getting paid less. And there were some great examples in the workshop of young men who were in the workshop and they had watched their mothers train men up in their same skill set. And the mums would watch these young men rise above them in the hierarchy and get paid more than them, when it was the woman who had actually trained them up and was still receiving less pay than them, having trained them and watched them go up the corporate ladder above them.
Wow.
Yeah. And then there's insane.
Yes.
Some of those other ones just around super stopping when you have children. Well, if you want the human race to continue, it might be a good idea to remunerate women in a way that doesn't disadvantage us. So there are so many women falling into the poverty trap because either of divorce or they just simply stopped receiving income when they were having children.
Yeah, I think we need to change the system with that. Like we're not valuing unpaid work. Like we don't value the caring roles that mums give, but they are actually contributing to society. They're doing a massive role, yet they're not getting any rewards for it in a economic way, which I just think is, we need to start looking at in a different light and thinking, well, how can we kind of value this work in our society?
Absolutely. And yeah. Hazel Henderson is a female economist. Okay. She talks about all that we see that is paid work is actually just icing on the cake.
Right.
The layers of the cake are nature and women's work, raising children and caring.
Wow.
And we're only counting the icing on the cake in this crazy GDP measure.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? Even actually now that I'm thinking of it, even the jobs that are more caring roles, they're not as paid highly as other roles. Like, as you said, nurses, teachers, all these roles that are very much caring in nature, they're all usually get paid quite low salaries.
That's it. And they're female-dominated industries. Mm, yes.
Exactly.
Yes,
yeah.
Precisely. So that's a little look at some of the structural.
Mm.
We could look at some of the cultural.
Yeah, let's go to cultural. Great.
So the first question you might want to ask is, okay, all these jobs that I see advertised, they're 9 to 5. Well, who made that up? Who made that up?
Yes, I know. Okay, so when does school finish?
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, what are you meant to do with that?
So complete inflexibility and that job description and the whole way we navigate that formal work world, it was designed by men who weren't doing much caring, as in dropping children off to school, picking them up. If they get sick, it's normally the mum who goes to get them and leaves the more flexible workplace, all of that.
Mm.
Another big one, and the statistics in Australia are pretty horrendous on this one, is how much more cooking and cleaning women do.
Right. Okay.
In the home, on top of working.
Yeah.
And the caring roles.
Yeah, which I'm sure it's like, I wonder how many hours more actually.
I should have that figure.
I wonder. Yeah. Well, what did I read the other day? Even I think women in Vietnam, and they do an average of about 4 to 5 hours every day, and men, this is to do with the report, so it's a survey, and the men said that they probably do about an hour or less each day. And they were addressing that of, okay, well, why aren't women kind of in Vietnam getting in the workforce? And it's like, okay, well, if you're doing 5 hours of housework every single day, that doesn't leave a lot of room to do proper paid work. And I'm sure it's actually very similar than in Australia as well.
It is very similar. Mm. And if I can plug a book which has all these stats in it, it's called Invisible Women.
Absolutely
fantastic. Exposing Data Bias in a World Designed for Men.
Awesome.
By Caroline Perez. And it does have all of the data across countries and globally.
Interesting. Okay, I'll link that in the description so everyone can see.
Good. Now, one of the earliest realizations I had that it was a male narrator generally narrating what's going on in the world is watching Wimbledon one year, decades ago, and the camera at certain points, at breaks in the play, would focus in on a good-looking woman. And suddenly it occurred to me, okay, that's not a woman behind the camera, probably. Mm. Mm-hmm. And they'd be, you know, it just suddenly I woke up to who's behind the camera, who's behind the narrative, and why are they choosing to look at in this particular way the people in this scene.
Totally, and that's something I explored within my uni degree, was kind of looking into the male gaze and how that contributes things and how that's kind of shaped. Yeah, our society and in movies, we'll get to that in a second, and all sorts of things. So it's interesting to kind of think about, well, yeah, who is behind the lens? I wonder in that example, do you think that was, if it is a man behind the camera, do you think that was a subconscious thing he was doing, or do you think that was actually, he was told by someone, okay, find some
pretty women? I suspect it's part of the job description.
Right.
Find some eye candy.
Yeah.
For all the men who are watching this sport.
Yeah.
That would be interesting to check. Or we're just so indoctrinated that he would be doing that anyway.
Yeah.
But
It's very interesting.
Yeah. And your point on the on movies, it brings us to the Bechdel test.
Yes. Okay. I wanted to bring this up actually because this blew me away. Okay. Yeah.
So Google Bechdel, a Bechdel test. And it's a test that you apply to movies to see if they are even closely coming to representing women in a vaguely civilized way.
Yeah.
And to pass the Bechdel test, there have to be at least two women in the movie who have names and who have a conversation with each other that isn't about the men in the movie.
Right. Okay. That seems like pretty easy things to pass.
You would have thought so. There are so many of the blockbuster films who fail the Bechdel test over and over and over. They're just, you know, women are tokenistic. They've got those big doughy eyes, big breasts, and they are playing bit roles which have no meaning in terms of the storyline, no character development, and really contribute very little to the whole plot.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, you think that it would just be so obvious that of course there's going to be women in a movie, and of course they're going to speak to each other. And not about the men as well. And, yeah, it's something I've definitely become conscious of lately, because I was talking to a friend the other day and she was said, oh, no, women are represented equally in movies and everything. And she was quite a clever person. And it just really took me aback because we definitely are not.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how we, because we're so used to seeing movies like that, we don't really see it.
That's it. And I find the same with boys. I have a beautiful son, but there's an inordinate amount of violence in movies.
No, yeah.
And it's normalized. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, that's an incredibly violent movie. No, it's not. It's just because we're used to it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a similar situation.
Yeah, and especially because violence is such a masculine kind of thing as well, and that's why there's so many action movies and so much violence. And what I kind of wonder is why in movies aren't we exploring more of issues that relate to women? Why aren't we exploring, say, a storyline to do with a miscarriage or a domestic violence situation where a woman ends up getting out with her family? Or I don't know, just so we can sort of raise awareness around different issues that women are actually facing and that we can relate to. Or menopause, like you brought up before. Like, why isn't there actually movies that have to do with women's issues?
Yeah.
Crazy.
And largely because there are very few women in power in director roles, producer roles, writing, creative, in terms of getting financing for it.
Yeah. But you think as well, there's like half the population is women. We want to see these movies. So it's interesting that they're not even getting put out there.
I feel like we've all drunk the Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
And until we, I don't know what the right metaphor is, spit it back out, or I'm not sure. It only goes so far, that metaphor. Until we wake up to that, we will just keep accepting what is happening now as normal.
Yeah.
And it's not. You know, I think if people came from another planet, they'd go, holy cow.
Exactly.
Why are the women just sitting around letting this happen?
Exactly. I really love the series. It was a HBO series called Girls. I'm not sure if you've seen
not.
That. It's really great by Lena Dunham.
I will see that.
It's amazing because it just, for me, it was very much, it's through the female gaze. It's of a group of women. They're in New York. She's accepting her body, embracing her body. She's not a size six. She explores sex and life, and it's just done in such a way where it's, yeah, to do with how women perceive the world. Women can be naked, but it doesn't have to be this sexualized thing. It can actually just be that's who we are and what we're doing.
Magic.
Yeah, you should check it out. It's a really good series.
Yeah, one of the ones that surprised me the most was when I asked, I was talking about the drip, drip, drip effect of women being placed second.
Yeah.
And a lot of people in the room hadn't thought of this one. Every time that we fill in a form, the Mr. comes first and the Ms., Mrs., MS. comes second.
Mm.
So that's this ubiquitous, you are second. But then also people brought up in the workshop, oh, yeah, and we are defined by our relationship to the man.
Exactly.
Whereas MR is just Mr. or Master. Don't know if you're single or married or divorced or whatever, but here we are having to declare how we relate to a man just by that nomenclature of
exactly
Miss or Mrs.
And why are we – yeah, and it's such a small thing of always – and I didn't, when you brought this up, I was not aware of that
right
at all. But it's weird. Why are we – why is Miss always put – or Mrs. always put second? And – as you said, it's not this huge thing where the world is going to end, but it's just these subtle, small things happening in our society that just subconsciously your mind will be like, okay, well, I am second to a mister.
Yeah.
And when I was little, actually, the miss and missus really confused me, and I brought it up to my mum one time because I was like, Mum, why do we have to change it? It doesn't make any sense to me. And Mum couldn't really answer because she didn't really know either. It's just it's so interesting. Like now I just always put Ms., like MS, because I'm just like, I'm just not going into that.
No. The indoctrination starts really early. You know, the subtle nature of it, as you just referred to, they did this great study of the top 100 children's books in 2017, and they found that male characters were twice as likely to have the leading roles, and in so many of the examples there were no female characters, particularly if there were a lot of animals in the book, they were all he. And so the indoctrination starts very young. The children learn that women don't have speaking roles.
Yeah.
By reading these famous, fabulous, so-called fabulous, you know, books, which are on the top 100 children's list.
Mm. And then you said as well that if there is a girl character, like an animal girl, she'll often be like a soft little small animal.
Exactly. And the male animals will be the rough, rugged lions and tigers who are actually predators.
Yeah.
And the little bunny rabbits and the robins have big eyes and don't speak up and they look like prey.
Yeah.
So that really hit me. Somebody said that in the workshop to me, that notion of the big eyes looking like wide-eyed prey caught in the, like a deer in headlights. I thought, oh, that's one step further than I'd even thought
of. Yeah. Crazy. It's scary how many layers that has to it.
Exactly. The one that really struck me early was the role of language.
Yes.
And I've had to retrain my husband, who's fabulous about this now. That ubiquitous word guys is so that was a bugbear of mine for a long time. Yeah. When a mixed group will be referred to as, hey guys, we're going to do this. And then in the next sentence, that same person could say, oh, that's a guy thing. You wouldn't understand that to the women saying, so, oh, well, hang on, before I was included, but now I'm not.
Now you're not.
It's that confusion. And again, not a big thing, but if you're constantly not sure if you're being referred to as the in-group or not in this conversation, it just undermines your own sense of who you are.
Yeah, wow, that's so interesting. And yeah, it's like, oh no, you're included, it's the guys, come on, of course that means you.
Yeah.
And then 2 minutes later, oh no, it's a guy thing. So
it's a guy thing.
Well, how does that make sense?
Yeah.
But I've actually been guilty of this, and it actually has been raised to my attention recently because I was doing some videos in our secret sisterhood group, and I would start it and I would say, hey guys. And that was often in my language. Mm-hmm. And I would listen to the videos back and it really stood out to me. And I'm like, why am I referring to the women in the group as guys? They're not guys. And it was just a very big shock for me. And I just say it in such a flippant way. But when it's coming out of my mouth, I don't think there's anything of it. But when I hear it back, I actually realize, hang on a second, I'm actually hearing this and it doesn't sit right with me, because that's not who they are.
Perfect. It's like they're not being seen for who they are. So to retrain my husband, whenever he said guys, I would just grab my breasts.
Yes.
And say, I'm not a guy, actually.
Yes.
And he got the hang of it pretty fast.
Oh my God, yes. Perfect.
And so the truth is, the word is superfluous. You don't need to say anything. You can just say hi.
Yeah, I loved it when you said that. So yeah, you don't actually need to have that word in there.
No. So the other thing that you'll hear quite often, I've found on radio, TV, is the use of the word people. Actually, the speaker is only thinking about men. So they're saying people, but it's only men. So one example is on the ABC the other day, they had somebody talking about midlife crises. And this man, I'm using that knowingly, was talking about how most people, when they get to a certain age, they have a midlife crisis and they want to buy a new car or get a new wife. Hmm. And you're thinking, okay, he wasn't actually talking about people, he was talking about men.
Yeah.
But in his mind, there was a disconnect.
Yeah, like that's what men want socially, that's what everyone wants.
Yeah.
And that's all people.
Yeah. And
so strange.
It was very strange. And then another example, there's a song, I should get the link for you. And the singer is singing about how people are having a lovely day and they're walking through the park and they're all wearing ties. I'm thinking, well, no, you're only seeing the men. You're not actually seeing people. You're seeing men ties.
Yeah.
Again, it's so subtle, but constantly we're excluded. I thought I was being referred to, but actually, no, I realize I'm not now.
Yeah, actually, no, I'm not people because I'm not wearing a tie. So therefore I'm not a person or what?
Or you just can't see me. Am I invisible?
Weird. Something actually relating to that, which I came across, it was like a meme that I came across the other week, and it was saying, like, womankind or womankind, and it was, I forget what it said, but basically mankind, oh, that includes men and women, what's your problem? Of course it includes women. But then if we say womankind, we could flip it and say, what's your problem? And that includes men.
Yeah.
So why are you worried about that? But it doesn't sit right because you're not used to someone saying, oh, womankind. Immediately you don't think of men. You feel like that can't be...
including men.
Then why do we say mankind and expect us to feel like, oh, we're included in that?
Yeah. Oh, well, we've been trained from an early age. You are included until you're not.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, interesting. Oh, gosh. Another one that I love around language is just looking at some of the adjectives that are used to describe men and women, and also our conversational styles. So you can ask yourself, well, who nags? That's so often used to apply to women, but there is no word for what's on the other end of the nagging, which is somebody not doing something that you've asked them to do 5 times.
Yes, actually, right? Why don't we have a word for that?
We should create because one we here should, and now.
Yes, we need to create a word. So if anyone has a good idea of what word that should be, because so true. We have language around the word nag, and nag is someone, that is definitely a women's sort of stereotypical thing that she does to a man.
Yeah.
So and we've created language around that, yet we haven't created language for the flip side.
That flip side of what's not getting done. And a similar one is the connotations around the word bachelor. Pretty, probably a bit hunky, nice grey, salt and pepper hair and independent and can move around the world and do whatever he likes. And then what do we hear when we see the word spinster?
Yeah, we think of it as like lady with her like five cats sitting at home. That's just the picture that popped in my head.
Totally.
And she's sad. She obviously can't get a guy for whatever reason. Whereas, for a man, it's like, oh, good on you. You're single within the life.
So that is such a different weighting in terms of how we value those two older people in society.
Yeah, so interesting. It was also around language. It was interesting, actually, when I was at the conference, I was sitting next to this amazing woman, and she was actually working in the space of gender equality, and she was super inspiring to me. And then we're listening to a speaker, and it was a woman, and she up on stage, and she had quite a commanding sort of presence. She was kind of like ordering sort of people around and kind of organizing it to suit her, which was really great. She was taking the role, like taking control of the room. Uh-huh. And then the woman sitting next to me said, "Oh, she's quite bossy, isn't she?" And I was like, and it just took me aback a little bit. And immediately my thing was like, I immediately thought, "Oh yeah, I was going to agree." And I was thinking, and then I caught myself, and I was like, "Oh, isn't that interesting? If that was a man up there, holding his space, commanding the room, we would like be sitting in awe and think, oh, wow, this guy knows what he's doing, or he's super successful, or whatever. But when a woman does that, she's bossy."
Brilliant, brilliant pickup.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That word bossy, and just that whole cultural thing of women aren't meant to be commanding and like that.
What are we meant to do? Are we meant to just be complacent, sit back, but then you're not getting your voice heard. And then when you do, you get called bossy, or it's such a hard fine line of like that.
We have to navigate. And I must give you that song that I played in the workshop.
Yes.
There's that line which says, "Don't be weak, but don't be strong."
Yes.
It's like, well, what do you want from me?
Yes. Don't be weak, but don't be strong. Yeah. Isn't that such a powerful statement? That's insane.
Mm. Yeah. The Daughters. It's a great song.
We'll link that in the description. Good. As well. Yeah, actually, everyone needs to listen to that song because it is very confronting, actually.
Yes. I love it. I love it. Little Big Town. So have we got time for a couple of built environment ones?
Yes, let's go to the built environment. Okay. Perfect.
I was really blown away by some of the examples in that book I referred to earlier, which were looking at road design. Road design in, and I may not have touched on this in the workshop, just that more women are more likely to be catching public transport.
Okay.
So when we invest billions of dollars in road creation, the construction of roads and then the maintenance of roads, it's actually a gender biased investment in a massive way. Mm. And a couple of really good studies were done in Scandinavia, which looked not only at road construction and the way women move about on public transport, which is underfunded, it's slower, it takes longer, but also there was an amazing study on the amount of money that was saved by redirecting the snow clearing infrastructure in the country. Mm. They had always been putting road snow clearing first, but actually when they realized it's the women who were walking with strollers, with aged people, wheelchairs, etc., on the snowy roads that we need to clear first, because they're using more of that that sort of mode of transport, and they're getting injured more. They're the ones who fall over and break their ankles and end up in the hospital. So they had all this brilliant data, whereas actually the men tend to only be in the cars between 8 and 9 and 5 and 6 doing one trip to work and back, whereas the women are doing multiple trips across sectors instead of
Just not this linear
linear hub and spoke. So there is so much in the built environment that has just been based on men's movement patterns and their day-to-day schedules. So road design, public transport investment, all of that. I think for a lot of us, the place we see it most is in the toilets. Basically, the queues at men's and women's toilets are so different. The size of the cubicles, it's like we know who designed them. It wasn't a woman who's got, she's got a period, she's got a baby on her hip, she needs to do the baby change. She's got three bags because she's done the shopping before she picked up the child,
yeah, she's going to take longer. So let's put some more toilets in there. But it's crazy how that happens in like literally every big venue. It's always the same. There's always a line for the women's bathroom, and men, there's no line. It always, I've never probably seen a line for the men's bathroom.
Yeah.
And what I've actually noticed lately as well, I don't know if this happens everywhere, but I've just seemed to starting to notice at shopping centers, when you walk in and there's like the aisle and then there's the men and the women's bathrooms, it's always the men's bathroom first,
right,
and then it's the women's bathroom, which is just an interesting thing. And I've just noticed it recently, and I'm thinking, is that just like whoever designed this, maybe was it a man and they just thinking of them first?
I want to meet these people.
Yes,
honestly, I want to meet these part people of this creation of this exhibition. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can go out and meet these people. What were you thinking? Yeah. Is that a conscious decision or is that subconscious?
Mm, yeah, it would be very interesting. I think a lot of the time it is subconscious. They're just not even thinking.
Yeah. And the last twist on that one is that now they're trying to do gender neutral toilets.
Okay, yeah.
And it's been a disaster because they just will keep the men's with the urinals and the what do you call it?
I don't even know what's in the men's bathroom.
The cubicles.
Yeah. I was like, what else is in there?
So keeping the urinals and the cubicles in the men's and the cubicles in the women's, mm-hmm. but just labelling them both unisex.
Right.
Well, what happened was women wanted to go past the men's urinals.
Yeah.
So, but the men were fine to go into what had previously been the women's because they're cubicles.
Yeah.
So it tripled the number of people going into that one where the women want to go, and the men's was even more empty.
So it actually made the issue worse.
It made
That's so interesting. Oh my gosh, crazy.
It's just silliness.
Oh.
And then other examples in terms of the man's body being used as the default for a human have massive safety implications. So the test crash, have I got that the right way around? Crash test dummies that sit in a car,
right.
They are not tested in any shape or form for lighter frames,
right.
Smaller frames. So there's a much higher incidence of women dying in car crashes and the airbag injuring women because they're set to go off and the seatbelts are set to work for a person of a certain weight and height.
Mm.
And that's not – women don't conform to that. Mm. Surprise, surprise.
Wow, so interesting. And I think even in the medical industry, they test often on male rats or men, and then it's always suited to kind of the male's bodies, whereas women bodies operate very differently.
Very differently. And it's totally generalized as though we're the same as perhaps someone's a smaller male, but nothing is checked in terms of our completely different hormonal system.
Mm.
We know we think differently, we're wired differently, our physiology, our anatomy is completely different.
Yeah.
But to generalize, this works on a 6 foot one bloke. Give it to the ladies now.
Yeah, exactly. That'll be fine.
Yeah.
No. Well, that is amazing. I think we've done a lot of examples. So thank you, Sam, for sitting with me today and going through that. I just find it, so eye-opening. And I hope for everyone listening that they kind of see what's happening in their lives, if they can relate to any of these things, if they know others. So when I would love for you to comment below and suggest some other examples. I'm really interested to see. Everyone has their own sort of things that they pick up on. But yeah, thanks for joining me, Sam. And I'm really looking forward to the exhibition, The Prison of Patriarchy. So should I link some details in that in the description, or do you want to let people know how they can follow that?
If anybody wants to contribute to it, I'm just building the content now, looking for creative types to build it out and finance it and, small things like that.
Yeah.
And it really is a collaborative endeavor. And I learned so much from that workshop. I would love to hear examples that your listeners have.
Yeah, definitely.
And hear from them.
Yeah. And I think I just want to say as well, I hoped this session, it's not meant to be a depressive, like, oh, the world's horrible and we're in this dire situation. It's really just meant to bring awareness to what is actually really going on in the world. And then when we're conscious about it, then we can actually sort of make active steps to create change.
Absolutely right. And so changing the lens through which we see the world is one of the most important things we can do. And if we can start to see where something perhaps isn't serving women, it's keeping us quiet or it's not good for our health, then we can start to do something about it. But if we can't even see that these systems, processes, language haven't been designed by us or for us, then we're just going to keep sleepwalking through this life. And life is too precious.
Agreed. Yeah, I agreed. Thanks, Sam. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Yay. Do you want to show your support and solidarity for women around the world? Well, we have created a beautiful symbol that represents women's empowerment and the importance of coming together as a sisterhood. Head on over to our online store to get your sisterhood symbol jewelry now. 100% of the profits are directed towards amazing women charities, so not only are you wearing something beautifully symbolic of the sisterhood, but you are also making a difference to those in need at the same time. Head to secretsisterhood.com to get your sisterhood symbol now. Thank you, sisters, for listening to our Sisterhood Stories podcast. We are so happy to have you a part of our tribe. Please subscribe to this podcast and let us know what you thought about this episode by heading on over to our Facebook group. Our Facebook group is a place where our sisterhood community can connect, chat, offer support and inspiration. So if you aren't a part of it already, head on over to Facebook to join. Thank you, sisters. When we uplift women, we uplift the world.